Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Not our usual fare of good, bad, and crazy martinis. If you've been with us since Christmas Eve and also on Friday, you know that we're in the midst of our annual year-end very special awards that we hand out to people for political achievements, both good and bad. And that's certainly the case again today as we take a look at worst scandal, best political theater, and worst political theater. And Jim, I'll kick off as usual, my selection for worst scandal, the VA. There's a lot of different scandals, of course, this administration has been part of. But when you think of who the victims are in this particular case, it's hard to imagine someone less deserving of government incompetence and efforts to cover up that incompetence than those who have shed their blood and worn the uniform of our country. And so the facts on the ground about how long these folks were waiting, and some of them died waiting for treatment for months and months, and then the books were cooked to make it look like they had gotten treatment when they haven't, and they were basically dismissed until it became obvious this wasn't just happening in Phoenix, but in many different places around the country. The slow response and the initial denials of the fact that this was the case involving care for our veterans gets my vote for worst scandal of the year.
Greg, I really can't top that. And yes, you know, look, it's not just a lack of scandals in the political world this year, but I think you're right in terms of gravity and importance and consequence. I'll just kind of add two mini scandals on either side of that. The first being how this scandal came to light, because the Washington Examiner and various, you know, you could say the specialty press that cover veterans' issues have been talking about this growing backlog and talking about problems at the VA for a long time. And yet, we're taking care of our veterans was a staple of Obama's speeches, a big part of his 2012 re-election campaign theme. As far as Obama was concerned, it was going fine. For way too many people in the media, that meant things were going fine. And for a vast majority of the public, because the media and the president were telling them they were fine, they believed things were fine. Well, things were not fine. The other side of this mini-scandal is, Greg, do you feel like they've done a fantastic job of follow-up on this story and checking in on the VA and seeing how those backlogs are doing? I feel, obviously, look, we've had a very busy news cycle of the last couple of months of the year, but this was a huge story in midsummer, and I can count on one hand the number of major follow-up stories I've seen from the press, and I think that this, you know, this really lets the administration off the hook. I have no idea if the new veteran secretary is doing any better than Shinseki. The short attention span media, as Rush used to call it, or the drive-by media, is a scandal in and of itself because it allows these types of problems to fester, worsen, become a major topic of coverage for a short period of time, and then fade into the background again.
Yeah, I think a couple things here. Number one, you've got the president who believes as soon as he's committed to caring for our veterans in his speech, that the speech itself automatically takes care of it. And then, of course, you have the media that believes as soon as Congress passes legislation to demand that it gets done, then the problem's over. So it's going to the next layer, at least. And the new Secretary McDonald, I believe, is saying the right things. It'll be probably a few months before we know just how much has actually changed here. But he now has the power to get rid of some of those bureaucrats. And let's hope that that has been the case, because the VA it stands out. And it's pretty hard to stand out among government bureaucracies, but it really did stand out for the amount of just gunk in the works for getting stuff done. And hopefully that is slowly changing, or even quickly changing. All right, on to best political theater. And for both of these choices, Jim, I don't know if this is the precise definition of political theater, but whenever you're in a primary and you're in a very crowded primary, and you're certainly not the prohibitive frontrunner, it's important for folks to get an idea of who you are and find a way to stand out against your competitors. And that's always going to be the case in the states where there's an open Senate seat. That was the case in Iowa this year. Joni Ernst was not the original favorite to win this nomination for the Republicans. But after 30 seconds, she was. Here's the first 10 seconds of that ad.
I'm Joni Ernst. I grew up castrating hogs on an Iowa farm. So when I get to Washington, I'll know how to cut pork.
Game over. She was the nominee. It's in Iowa. You had an opponent who then degraded farmers in a speech to lawyers in Texas. And Joni Ernst is the first woman ever elected to Congress. And that ad is probably the biggest reason why.
That is a really good choice. And I really think you could have stopped it right after grew up on a farm castrating hogs. I would say, stop, take my vote now. Don't go any further. You've got to take my money now. You know, stop talking to me. That is a fantastic product, and I want to buy it immediately. Really good choice there, Greg. I struggled with this. I'm going to go in a slightly different direction, also a Senate race. And it's a very simple, brief moment, but I think it ended up symbolizing a bit of how the year went for the Democratic Party. And that was the debate moderator out in Colorado calling Senator Mark Udall Mark Uterus. Once you've gone there, you know that name's going to stick. You know, it's a devastating nickname. It's not coming from a Republican. It's not some ninny doing this. This is, you know, it's a serious point behind it, which was his relentless, inane war on woman narrative that he was convinced was going to bring him to victory and may very well have cost him that Senate race. Obviously, it's tough to dislodge an incumbent, and Colorado's not a deep red state. And, you know, it's funny, it's accurate, it sticks in the mind. And you could kind of argue that at that moment it was kind of over for Mark Udall. That really once, you know, because then everybody in the country had to retell that joke, you know, that basically it was the sort, perfect sort of thing to go viral. He was never going to take it off. It was never going to, you know, and he had played into it. It wasn't just, you know, calling him a ninny or something like that. So, that I would say is what pretty darn consequential and one of the best political moments and best political theater of 2014.
Yeah, I would add honorable mention. Speaking of debates, or maybe it's just even an editorial board, sit down, Allison Grimes with the Louisville Courier Journal and refusing to state whether she had voted for Barack Obama in 2008 and 2012. Not only did that dog her for weeks on end, it then made it incumbent upon reporters to ask every other Democratic nominee around the country whether they did, and we got some good answers from some of the other folks as well. So definitely some good choices in that category. All right, on to worst political theater. I'm going to get much more serious here. One was probably not intentional political theater, but certainly turned out that way, and that was President Obama on vacation at Martha's Vineyard announcing the beheading of Jim Foley by ISIS and then immediately heading to the golf course and teeing off about 10 minutes later. And I couple that with what a lot of people think is political theater involving our own military action and the limited amount of airstrikes that are going on right now. It's just on both fronts a sign that, once again, as we mentioned last week in one of our regular martinis, Jim, the lie of the year being that ISIS was a JV team, and it looks like the response might be more along the JV lines than the threat.
You know, that's a really good choice there, Greg. I had a tougher time with this category because there are a lot of things in politics we don't particularly enjoy watching. But I'm going to say that my nominee for the worst theater, it's kind of a multiple year winner. If you and I ever cover another budget showdown again, it'll be too soon. Right. And the thing is that it never turns out well for our side, for starters. And you might say, oh, Jim, you're a Jets fan. You should be used to that. But what it is that, look, the problem with a budget shutdown is that when budget showdowns eventually lead to talk of a government shutdown, Republicans are afraid of government shutdowns for good reason, because they generally lose a lot in the polls. Yes, they rebounded quickly after the last one, but that is in large part because of Obamacare being the spectacular disaster that came along right afterwards. The reason the two parties take the stances they do is because the Democrats know they're never going to get blamed for a government shutdown. They can demagogue this thing, because what it is that you don't have any leverage from the Republican side. And so Barack Obama can demand everything and make no concessions and know that the media is going to say he's being reasonable, and it's these obstinate, crazy, hostage-taking Republicans that are the problem. And I see the Ted Cruz's of the world trying to galvanize the party, trying to, come on, guys, if we all stand together, we can do this. And for obvious reasons, Republicans don't want to do this because they're convinced that they're going to end up losing the public argument. And I don't think it's, you know, it's not for lack of trying. And I don't think this is necessarily that there are, in this particular case, the elected Republicans in Washington are stupid or bad public speakers or they don't have convictions or something like that. No. Ted Cruz said before the last government shutdown, he was at a rally in Texas, and he said, what Republicans need to do is something we haven't done in a long time. We need to stand up and win the argument. And the crowd went nuts. Yeah, but you know what? We don't. And that's a really tough spot to be in. But it's not for lack of trying, and it's not because we're bad. It's because the media has a very simple template for this. And back when Elizabeth Warren started making noises about this, she said, you know, I'm going to oppose this spending bill. I will vote against it. I will stop it. And you guys will shut down the government. And not a single person in the media said, Elizabeth Warren, that is nonsensical, because you're the one who's refusing to go along with a bill that would fund most of the government. This is where the disingenuousness of the media and their outright dishonesty ends up having really big real-world consequences.
Excellent choice as well, as your thoughts on all the other issues of the day as well. Jim, we'll pick it up tomorrow with more lovely awards being handed out, and I'm sure our honorees will all be touched by our selections.
Lovely touching tomorrow. You got it. Looking forward to it, Greg. See ya.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to join us again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch Year End Award Edition.